This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, president, and for more than 20 years, KPP has been helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. And now, today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of Invest Talk. It is February 24th, 2017. And of course, as every day, we talk about trying to improve your investing skills to make you above average. Now, one of our information sources we send to clients and potential clients and people who have interest is our KPP Premium Newsletter. It comes out every Friday. It's an e-newsletter. And I usually skim over the highlights of it on Friday, like today. And the current market conditions segment, which is the first one. I mentioned the slow holiday week because it was shortened and the slow data coming out this week. Remember, we had lots of data the week before, but not this week, kind of slow. We did have some housing numbers, which was good. I talk about the role of the consumer, the strength, the small strength, the gaining small strength of the economy. And the reason being because consumers believe that the economy is going to get better. And their belief is making it better. It's that simple. Remember, Trump hasn't really done anything to boost the economy. The Fed has none. You know, the Fed's raised rates in December. It's probably going to raise rates in March, and I mentioned that in the newsletter too. That's not going to help the economy. But everybody believes what Trump is going to do, and that's reduce taxes, reduce paperwork, you know, red tape. That's going to help the economy. Everybody believes it. What if he doesn't get it done? What if it's not as good as everybody thinks? What's going to happen to the stock prices then? But what if it is just as good as everybody thinks? Stock market's still going to rise? I talk about that in the newsletter. In the portfolio management section, I talk about numbers, analyzing the numbers. I do that quite often. How to, you know, look at qualitative measures of a particular stock. And, you know, I also have, of course, a couple stock ideas. I come out every week in that newsletter. If you'd like to try our premium newsletter for a month, there's no risk. You can check out 4 issues. Remember, it comes out every Friday. And if you're not pleased, we'll refund your $9.99. That's what it costs per month. To sign up, go to investtalk.com. Since we're talking about useful information, let me steer you over to our recommended books section on investtalk.com. For example, you'll see Warren Buffett's 3 favorite books, A Guide to the Intelligent Investor, Security Analyst, and Wealth of Nations. There's a summary of each book, and you can click on and make a purchase through Amazon if you'd like. Now, let's hear your investing experience. I haven't heard much lately about that, and we're ready for any questions you want to talk about, as long as it's financial. 888-99-CHART, and let's go to the phone to take the first question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hey, Steve or Justin, I have a question about buying ETFs. First of all, I'd like to know what the ticker symbol is for the Russell 3000, and if there's a difference between the Russell 2000 or the Russell 3000, why would one of those be better than the other? But when you're choosing an ETF, do you look at it like you would a stock, where you try to find it in a low 5-year PE range, or look at the companies in it and how strong they are, or how do you value an ETF's strength, and why would you choose it? I listen to you guys on podcasts, and I'll listen to you on that. Thank you.
Okay, I don't know the symbols. I can look them up, but I don't really have the time here to look up what a symbol for the Russell 2000 or 3000. And there's definitely a difference in them. You got, you know, those different indexes. They track different parts of the market. And when you're looking at ETFs, you're not really looking at the stocks inside them. You're looking at what sectors, what industries, what index they track. And you're saying to yourself, I think this is the sector, industry, or index I want to be in. And that's why you do, because you really can't. The S&P 500 is 500 stocks. You're going to analyze each one of those 500 stocks. Russell 2000, 2,000 stocks. You see, so you're not going to be able to do that. You can, if you're going to get into sector ETFs, then you got to understand the economic cycle and then the stock market cycle because at different parts of the cycle, different sectors or different types of stocks work better than others. So you're going to have to learn that. And it's out there on the internet. You can find that out. You're going to learn that. Remember, the economic cycle moves in a cycle up and down, up and down. And so does the stock market cycle. But the stock market cycle usually moves ahead of the economic cycle. Anyways, good questions. But, you know, Russell 2000, Russell 3000, pretty easy to find the difference. Just type them in and take a look. Let's go to Mike at Riverside. How you doing, Mike?
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Got a question about a stock. The ticker symbol is KND, Kevin Nancy David.
Uh-huh.
And it looks like it's coming off of the bottom, and next week is their earnings, and I'm thinking this might be a good time to jump in since it's going on the upside.
Okay.
I wanted your opinion on that.
Okay, this is Kindred Healthcare, Inc., and the symbol KN is a Nancy, D is a dog, KND. They're out of Kentucky. They operate 95 long-term acute care hospitals in 22 states and 90 nursing centers and 7 assisted living centers. It's a fairly small company at $647 million. Earnings are going to be 74 cents a share this year and then 61 cents next year. And they made $1.28 last year, so it's much less, and that's probably why the stock has fallen from the high of $15 down to a low of about, what, $6.75? Today is at $7.60. So it looks like, I'm going to have to agree with you, I think it looks like it's really put in a bottom here. I think this is where it may not go down lower. It pays a 6.3% dividend on a $7 stock. And that looks like that's supportable with the earnings and the cash flow. And they're growing still, but their growth has slowed way down. Probably, I would suspect that before they were buying companies, and maybe they're not. I don't know. I'd have to take a closer look at that. The growth rate is now 2 to 5% sales growth. And the earnings have still fallen, but I think this looks like the bottom to me. Now, it's a small company, so it's higher risk. And the biggest problem, Mike, is the debt. They have lots of debt, but that might be because they purchase things. And if that's the case, as long as they have a huge cash flow, $3.64 a share, so long as they can afford it, I'm okay with that debt, and I think it's fine. But you got to make sure that that is supportable. And it does look like a bottom to me, Mike. It does.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. KND, everybody. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley. You have a retirement portfolio, stocks, funds, bonds. But do you have a plan to help keep you on track, to minimize risk, to maximize growth? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5. We're live Pacific time.
Hi, my name is Andrew. I'm a college student. I'm graduating in May, and I recently just started trading on the stock market. We've been talking about a lot in my class about GE, and I was just wondering if that was a good buy or not. And I've been looking at their financials, and I really don't know much, but I was just curious if I should buy it. Thank you. Bye.
GE is a great company. It's just expensive. It's expensive. Let's look a little closer. General Electric. It's a $267 billion company. Huge company. And I like the fact that they kind of whittled down some of their extraneous businesses down to some core businesses. I think that's a smart thing on their part. Manufacturing, transportation, energy generation, consumer appliances, industrial and medical equipment. Those are their focus right now. And it's financial. They do finance some of the purchases of their products. They made $1.14 per share in 2016. This year, 2017, they're going to make $1.63, and then next year, $1.91. It's a $30 stock, okay? So we're talking about a 16, 17 PE, and that is not cheap. It's not overly expensive. I think it's a little expensive. Return on equity is only 13%. The sales growth is just not there because it's so big. Last quarter, it fell 2%. Quarter before, that was up 4%. So it's very slow grower, and I just don't. I want to buy it when it's cheap. That's when I want to buy it. And what would be cheap? Well, if it got down to the, low 20s, maybe. Well, it's at 30 now. Maybe down there, I would feel much more comfortable. I'll say this. It looks like it's put in a bottom here, and it might bounce up from this level. But for me, they pay 3.2% dividend. They have a decent amount of debt. And I'll tell you this, insiders have been buying for a while, so they like what they see. It's just not cheap enough for me, GE, General Electric. Okay, notoriously boring dividend investors have reason to bust out a victory dance. What you need to know about dividend investing in 2017, that's one of our talking points. It worries me because there's articles about how well dividend stocks did in 2016. And we'll talk about that in more detail. That worries me a bit. That's going to be one of our main talking points. Oil prices are going to fall, according to a professor of Oxford, a professor of energy policy at Oxford University. He thinks they're going to fall. And not just, short term, constantly going down for the next few years. Down. We'll talk about why he thinks that. And I want to talk about Trump only sees deficits, but there are countries where the U.S. has, where we sell them more than we import from them. There's some caveats to that, but we're going to talk about that. I'm going to list the countries. And finally, the most popular places to retire. Every year, there's a list comes out, and I like to talk about where the most popular places are retired. And the top 100 places, 25 of them are in Florida. I think Florida's a great place to be in the winter, but summer, oh man, I would never want to be in Florida in summer. Way too hot and humid. But that's number one place, Florida. What do you think? California doesn't even make the top list here of the places. I will say that. I will say they do make the list, but it's way down the list. Interesting. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Of course, I want to talk about what's on your mind first. What do you want to discuss? The market did go up again today. The Dow is up 9, the NASDAQ up 10, and the S&P up 3. And that all came in the last hour or two after Trump spoke, because the market was down before that. All three indexes, it looks like it was the Dow was going to break its winning streak, but it didn't. It didn't break. It was up 11 days in a row now. It was up 10. Now it's 11. We thought it would break that streak today, but it didn't. So obviously the market is way overbought, way overpriced, but I've said before, it could stay that way. It can stay that way for some time. You cannot time the market. It's impossible. Now, that doesn't mean you don't take some precautions, but still, you got to stay with the market. This is Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. You can always see my portfolio review schedule for our offices in Northern California. And you can always set a date for an informal review on Skype or telephone from anywhere in the U.S. You can do it on InvestTalk.com. Go to InvestTalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then portfolio review.
Hi, Steve. This is Ted Davis. I'm 18, obviously nowhere near retiring, but I want to start investing. I listen regularly. I was looking at getting into Under Armour, UAA. I've noticed that it hovers at 22 or 21 right now. That's the lowest it's been in 5 years, and I noticed that it gets up to right around $100 and then drops. And I also noticed that their CFO just resigned or got let go. Should I wait or should I go for it? Thank you.
Well, you got to understand what's going on with Under Armour. Under Armour, just because it's gone up and down in that range doesn't mean it will continue to go up and down in that range. Under Armour is now almost $9.5 billion company. They had problems with their most recent earnings. They've been falling for a year. It's expensive. They're going to make 42 cents a share this year. They made 58 cents a share last year. Then they're going to make 52 cents a share next year. So it's going to rebound a bit. But okay, let's take 52 cents a share. It's a $21 stock. Well, that's what? A 20 PE plus? 20 plus PE? Well, or is it? You know, I take that back. It's more like 40. A 40 PE? Okay, so 40 PE, yeah, that's very expensive, especially for a clothing store. Now, Under Armour, everybody loves their stuff, but that's still very expensive. Very expensive, and especially in the light that the sales have kind of slowed down. Sales on the 3 quarters ago were about 28%, then 22%, and now 12% in the most recent. They have to turn that around. The PE for this type of company should be no more than the market PE, which is around 15, not 40. So I think it's still very expensive. It may bounce from here, but it's not something I'm interested in. It's too expensive for a clothing company. That's just too expensive. It's not growing fast enough to support the price it's at now. So even though it's fallen hard from, you know, $50 a share a year ago to now 21, it does not mean the stock is cheap. I mean, it has nothing to do with whether a stock is cheap or not. What the price is what does, everything has to do with how much earnings are they going to make and what's their sales growth and, you know, profit margins and those kinds of things, not just the price. It moved down and up. Okay? Thanks for the call, though. I appreciate it. Okay, what do you need to know about dividend investing in 2017? Okay, so this article is all upbeat about dividend investing in 2017. And this is a problem. Now, we had a really, in our balanced income program, where all we do is buy dividend-paying stocks, we had a really, really good year. And the average dividend-paying stock returned about 15.6% last year, double the average of the non-paying dividend-paying stocks of 7.6%. So the dividend payers had a really, really good year last year. And when people are articles and everybody's upbeat about dividend payers and excited about it, I immediately go the other way. It makes me nervous. Does this mean that the dividend payers are about ready to not perform as well? Usually after a really good year, the following year is not so good. I'm just a bit concerned about all the articles we're seeing about how well the dividend paying stocks have been. Man, it makes me nervous. Now, have you heard of the dividend aristocrats? Okay, that's dividends that companies that pay dividends that have been for like 25 years and have been raising dividends for over that period of time. I have some, by the way, some ETFs that concentrate on dividend-paying stocks. If you want it's a short list, maybe I think five or so. If you want a copy of that list, send me an email. Go to investtalk.com, click on Contact Steve, send me an email, and I'll send it to you. But I do want you to be aware that when something works really, really good in 1 year, the following year doesn't necessarily mean it will. Not necessarily it won't, but the chances are good that it's not going to be as good of a year as the year before. Chances are pretty high. Pretty high. Anyways, dividend paying stocks. I like them. They're boring. They're not nearly as exciting as high growth stocks, but they're consistent. Okay, let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Listen to you all the time. Stock I've been watching, it's been doing real good, and I think it's on some buy lists. It's an agriculture stock called Monsanto. I believe the ticker is MON. What do you guys think about this stock? Would it be a good purchase? Does it pay a good dividend? Thanks. Can't wait to hear it. Bye.
Well, the dividend is kind of not very good. 1.9% Monsanto company. It is a big company, $50 billion. You would think they'd pay a higher dividend than that, but they don't. Manufactures corn and other crop seeds, that kind of thing. They're expensive. $5.39 a share they're going to make next year. It's $112 stock. So that's a what, 22 PE? And a five-year range is 16 to 27. But it does have a very good return on equity, 35%. And the sales growth has just turned around the last couple of quarters. it's got some momentum behind it. It's just a little expensive. I'd rather see you buy it on a pullback, but if you really wanted to get in it, you can buy it right now. This is Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. You can always see my portfolio review schedule for our offices in Northern California, and you can always set a date for informal review on Skype or the telephone from anywhere in the U.S. You can do it on InvestTalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab, then portfolio review.
Invest Talk continues next. Steve and Justin are talking very highly about Active 401k. It's a new program that's available right now for Invest Talk listeners. It enables employees to make smart choices in their employer's 401ks. So if you're frustrated by your 401k performance and your limited time to research, Active 401k might be just the solution for you. It ranks your current options within your employer's plan. And then all you do is log in and make the changes. We'll tell you what to buy, what percentages, and what funds. This program is being offered by invitation to KPP clients and a limited number of our Invest Talk listeners. Again, it's called Active 401k. And if you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab, and then Active 401k. Now let's continue with our podcast. Invest Talk continues. Dividend-focused ETFs. There's a whole list of them, a short list, handpicked by Steve, to show you a broad mix of dividend-paying stocks and other equities that pay steady dividends. If you're an Invest Talk insider, get yours today by signing up on investtalk.com.
Hey, Steve or Justin. This is Tyler out in Nebraska. I'm a podcast listener. I wanted to know your thoughts on Sun Life Financial. SLF is the ticker symbol. I was just looking to diversify my portfolio, and I'm just looking at some insurance companies. Love the show, and any thoughts would be much appreciated. Thank you.
SLF, Sun Life Financial Inc. out of Toronto, Ontario. It's a $22.5 billion company, so it's a very large cap. Offers life insurance, health insurance, and annuity products in U.S., U.K., Asia, and Canada. Okay, it's going to make $3.08 this year. That's 25% less than last year, where it made $4.06. So that's not good. Then next year, it's going to bounce up 8% to $3.32. So we'll use $3.32 and say, okay, it's a $36.80 stock right now. So that means that the P.E. ratio is about 11. Okay, 11. Is that good? You have to compare P.E. ratios with their industry, or you compare P.E. ratios with their own five-year average. So this five-year average for this company is 7 to 48. So it's not, you know, it's not bad at 11, 12. It's pretty reasonably priced. But I'm a little nervous about why did sales go down almost 57% in the most recent quarter? That kind of, I want to know why the sales have been extremely erratic quarter over quarter the last 2 years. And I'm going to want to know why before I decide to buy this company. It pays a nice dividend, 3.5%. Doesn't have a lot of debt. Has good cash flow. The return on equity is only 12%. I like it to be a little higher, but that's not terrible. But it's the sales being erratic that kind of concerns me. And, you know, so I know there's other insurance companies that I like better than this. Like better than this. It's just, I don't know, I wouldn't buy it. When it gets down to maybe it's at 36 now. Maybe if it goes down to around 30, that might be much more attractive. There's a lot of support down there. And it looks like it's heading down to me, price-wise. So I'd stay away from it for the short term. I'd stay away from it. Let's go to Goal in Newark. How you doing, Goal?
How you doing, Steve?
Okay. Good.
Hope all is well with you.
Thank you. Hope so for you, too.
Yes, I had a quick question on a company called AKO Gen. A-K-A-O.
A-K-A-O. Okay. Okay.
AKO Gen is the name of the company, and just needed the outlook. I wanted to see about purchasing that?
Okay, this is a small company, $826 million, so that's a small cap. And my initial, as I'm looking at it, sales growth has skyrocketed recently, sales, and the stock has run from $5 to $23 in a very short period of time. I mean, we're talking, what, 2-3 months? And
yes.
The company does not make any money, has never made money,
right.
Not going to make money. So I don't buy companies that don't make money, and I don't recommend anybody buying companies that don't make money. This is Icaogen, Inc., developing novel antibacteria to treat multiple drug-resistant germs, so and infections. So it's kind of a pioneer kind of company. This is the kind of company, goal that either you will lose all your money or you'll make a fortune. There's not any much in between. But they're not making money. They're not. Their cash flow is negative, and it's just too risky for me. And it's already run up hugely, so I wouldn't chase this one, Gold. It's too risky. I wouldn't chase it.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. AKAO is a symbol, everybody. Yeah, it's run up so much. $5 to $23 in 2-3 months? Mm-mm. You know, I know how that sounds attractive, but it's too late. You missed the big move. And, you know, I'm not sure the big move was something you should participate in anyway because it doesn't make any money. Remember, everybody, I do not buy companies that do not make money. To me, they're not real companies until they make money. They're just burning cash, not interested. That includes Snapchat, by the way, when it comes out. You know, I don't like IPOs either. Guess I'm just grumpy. I don't know. I don't like IPOs. I don't like companies that don't make money. And trust me, I know that some of those companies that don't make money skyrocket. I know that. Just not my cup of tea, I guess. Been around a long time. I've seen too many of them go out of business. That's my fear. Oil prices are to fall, according to a professor of energy policy at Oxford University. He thinks oil prices are going to fall long term. He said, because of that, OPEC should be pumping all the oil they can to get it at the best price they can get right now, at $50 a barrel. Now, he also studied this. You know, he's not just talking just to talk or releasing a paper just to release a paper. He has studied oil from 1870 to 1970. Oil fell in price from 1870 to 1970 while demand skyrocketed. So his conclusions are that just because demand goes up, just because, doesn't mean the prices are going to go up. And it probably has something to do with discovery of more and more and more oil all the time. You know, it's pretty consistent. He feels that the $27 barrel in February 2016 is more realistic price than the current price of $54. He feels demand's going to go down because we're living in a digital world and there's not much less need for oil. He feels that, you know, that's not, and maybe it's true with the advent of electric cars, will oil go down? The Citigroup just put a target price of oil at $70 a barrel. So don't think everybody agrees with them. They don't. Not everybody agrees. But I wanted to give you his perspective. He's saying that there's plenty of oil and we'll have plenty more oil and oil prices go down. I, for some reason, I think he's right. I think that the oil, we're going to have plenty of oil. But I don't think it's going to go down as much as he does. I think it's going to stay right around $50 a barrel. I think it's going to hover there for a while. When I say a while, years, several years. We'll be interesting to see how that turns out. Anyways, it's Investop Personal. Time for the Investop Personal, everybody. The day-to-day personal finance choices that can impact everybody's lives, your life. Can you convert a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA? The simple answer is yes, you can convert it. But what are the consequences? Try to remember the major difference here of the two. A regular IRA is funded with tax-deferred money. In other words, you pay no income tax. You put $5,000 into a regular IRA. You get to deduct $5,000 from your adjusted gross income for that year, so you don't have to pay income tax on that. In a Roth IRA, it's after-tax investments, money you put in after tax. So both of these accounts will grow tax-free over the years, but in a regular IRA, when you start pulling it out in retirement, you have to add it to your back to your adjusted gross income for the year that you take it out, for however much you take out, and pay income taxes. The hope is it'll be a lot less tax bracket because you'll be retired. Roth, you never have to pay any taxes ever again. You can take it out and never have to pay taxes on it. There's the difference in the two. If you convert a regular IRA to a Roth IRA, which you can do anytime you want, that conversion, at the time of conversion, you have to add that money to your income for the year and pay taxes on it for that year. But there's no penalty for doing that. If you withdrew it and spent it, you'd have taxes and penalty. Okay? So those are the difference. That's the difference. Try to understand the difference there. If you have a Roth 401k, you can roll that into a Roth IRA if you no longer work for that employer. Just like a regular 401k, you can roll into a regular IRA. And then you can roll it into a Roth IRA if you want to after that. Just the way these things are, everybody. That's Invest Talk Personal. Do you have experience with credit unions you'd like to share with me, maybe? Send me a note. I don't care about any topic. Click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. That's an email that comes directly to me.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium Newsletter. It comes out each Friday, and one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Jessica of San Diego. I am a regular podcast listener. I want to get your opinion for two mutual funds, MABIX, Matthews Asia Dividend Investor, and MINDX, Matthews India Investor. I don't own this yet, but I want to know if this is a good fund to add into my portfolio for a long term. Between the two funds, I'm not sure which one is a better fund. So I'm looking forward to hear from you. I love your show, and thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, Matthews is probably one of the best funds that no one really knows about. These are both Matthews funds. One's the Matthews India Fund, one's the Matthews Asia Fund. MINDX is the Indian fund. Both have 4 or 5 star ratings from Morningstar. And if I was to pick one, you would have to base it just on what you think of the areas of the world that they're in, how they're going to do. And if I was to pick one, Matthews is very good. You could buy both of them and have good foreign exposure. I would pick the Indian one if I was to pick one. Because of what's going on in India politically and economically, I just feel more comfortable with being in that area of the world versus just the Asian. Now, the Asian one is MAPIX, might include, since it's Asia, it might include India in there. So we don't know that. I'd have to look it up and find out. But Matthews is a very good fund family. You'll also note that the cost of these funds, the management fees that they charge are pretty high. Matthews does that because of the foreignness. The buying these foreign stocks is expensive. So don't bet the farm in either one. I wouldn't put more than, 10% in either one of these funds. So don't be overly aggressive, but I'd pick the Indian over the Asian. Let's go to Cindy in San Jose. How you doing, Cindy?
Oh, yeah. Hi. Hi, I have a question regarding what your thoughts are on the Fidelity ETF.
Okay.
And it's F is Frank, N is Nancy, C is Charlie, L is Larry.
Okay, that's Fidelity MSCI Financials Index. Okay, so it's exchange traded fund seeking results corresponding to the MSCI USA Financial Index. So it would probably be full of banks and insurance companies, those kinds of things. And that has done very, very well since the election. Actually, if you go back a year ago, it did pretty well. But since the election, the presidential election, it skyrocketed. So my fear here is you're chasing performance, Cindy. I like it, but I don't think you want to buy it at these high prices. I think you want to be patient and wait for that pullback and then get into them because it just run up too much. Many of the financials have done that. But I do think it's a good area to be in at this point, especially with interest rates rising. And you would think, Cindy, that with interest rates rising, it wouldn't be good for the financials, but it's just the opposite. Just the opposite. Rising interest rates means they charge more money. As long as interest rates don't go up too fast, they can charge more money and stay ahead of it and make more profits, financials. So wait for a pullback, and then I would say thumbs up for me, but not now, okay?
At what point would you enter?
Well, if I had a perfect entry point, it would be about $30 a share. It's at $36 right now. So that's like a 20% pullback. If I don't think you'll get that pullback, maybe a 10% at $32, $33, that's probably $33 is where you're going to get it, and that's where I'd probably pick it up if I wanted to do so.
Okay. All right.
Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know it's only 10% or 20%, but, you know, that can mean quite a bit. You know, and whenever something's making new 52-week highs, which this is, and it's been doing it like the stock market's done it, you know that at some point it can't do that anymore. It's got to give something back. I just can't tell you when and how much. I wish I could. I just can't. No one really knows. No one really knows. I saw some new dates for Northern California for individual retirement views. In March, I'm going to be in San Jose twice, March 15th and the 25th. 15th and 25th. Or if you live out of the range of our California offices, we can meet via Skype on the phone. We have a lot of outside California clients. Be happy to have you as a client. To reserve your time, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then portfolio review. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. Our last segment of the hour is coming up. I've got a few more things to go over, but your calls always come first. So try to give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve and Justin. Mike Stevens again from Louisville, Kentucky. I got a question about bonds. I know you have not been favorable on bonds, and when you do, you talk about bond ladders. But these are actually buying the actual bonds, but there are two well-regarded diversified bond, non-traditional bonds, multi-sector bond funds like PIMCO's PONDX, that's PONDX, and Lord Abbott's LBNDX, and they're pumping out about 4.5% to 5.5% distribution per year, and actually didn't know what the risks were in that and exactly how they were able to make so much more money on bonds than the other companies. Might want to explain that one for us so we have an idea, because not all of us have the inclination to assemble a bond ladder, and even if we do, I question the returns. And have a great day.
Okay, the IBNDX is Ivy Bonds, and then the PONDX is PIMCO. And when you're buying bond funds, these are bond funds. Whenever there's a five-digit symbol ending with an X, that's a bond, that's a fund, a mutual fund. Okay, not a stock. But anyways, I'm looking at the second one, the Ivy one that you gave me, and the average duration is average maturity date is 10.2 years. The average credit quality is triple B. That means it's a fairly long-term bond fund, and that means that if interest rates go up, this will probably go down in value, and the current yield is only about 3.4%. I don't see 5% anywhere here. The PIMCO is less duration. Okay, and that's PONDX, less duration, and that's a higher quality bond fund. Their duration is 4.75 years. Try to remember that when interest rates rise, the value of the fund goes down. They'll still pay the yield, and the yield you're getting from this one is like 3 to 5%. So it's much higher with shorter duration. So you probably want to go with PIMCO if you're going to buy a bond fund. I don't like bond funds. I like bonds and holding the maturity, but I don't care for bond funds. Now, the problem you have with the PIMCO, if you were going to pinpoint a problem, is that they have more bonds that are not quality. They have more bonds that are not quality, triple B or plus or higher, which are called investment grades. That's how they get that higher return. But you know what? You shouldn't worry too much because they have a lot of diversification. And really, the only time you really worry about the low-quality bonds is when a recession is hitting. So I think PIMCO is a better investment of the two. But mind you, I think bond funds are not where you need to be. If you want to buy bonds, and I don't mind bonds at all. As you pointed out, I like to build a ladder and buy my own bonds. We have a program in which our balanced income program, which half of the positions are bonds and we ladder them. The other half is high dividend paying stocks. So, because it's a more conservative account. Okay, I think we're getting close to running out of time. Most popular places to live. What's number one right now? This is where retirees, they're just counting the retirees and where they're going. Excuse me. So it's just the popularity of retirees moving to these places. And number one is Asheville, North Carolina. Have you ever been to Asheville? It's gorgeous there. Number two is Sarasota, Florida. Three is Venice, Florida. Four is Austin, Texas. Five is Prescott, Arizona. Six is Beaufort, South Carolina. Seven is Naples, Florida. So eight is Fort Myers, Florida. Nine is San Diego, near me. And 10 is San Antonio. Now, Florida has 25 of the top 100 places. Okay, then comes North Carolina at 11, Arizona at 9, South Carolina at 8. California and Tennessee are 6th. Six places on the top 100. Kind of interesting. Anyways, time to go. Our time is up for the hour. If you'd like to contact me directly with a personal message, just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for being with us today, and I really appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.